sustained grievous injuries during Israel's months-long campaign against Hamas. Below that, we have a picture of an Army enlisted man, a Spec 4, folding a flag. The caption, "After 83 years, an Army funeral. Private Albert King, a black soldier killed by a white military police officer in Georgia, had been blamed for his own death." That is attached to a story on the inner pages of the first section that we will not, unfortunately, have time to read. And to the right, a picture of Speaker Mike Johnson sitting at a desk. Those are the photos on the front pages of The Current and The Times. For the lead story in The New York Times, let's go to Kathy Danaher.
The opening article on the bridge collapse is from the New York Times internet feed from John Yoon, Mike Ives, Victoria Kim, and Derek Bryson Taylor. Here's what we know. A major bridge in Baltimore collapsed after being struck by a cargo ship early this morning, sending vehicles plunging into the water and setting off an emergency response, the Coast Guard and local authorities said. It was not immediately clear how many people were on the span. The Francis Scott Key Bridge, which is a part of Interstate 695, when the cargo ship struck, Baltimore's fire chief, James Wallace, told a news conference that officials were searching for, quote, upwards of seven people, end quote, and that two others had been pulled from the water. One of them was in serious condition. He said the fire department had used sonar to detect vehicles that fell into the water. Baltimore's fire chief, James Wallace, said at a news conference that search and rescue efforts would be guided by dive teams. Quote, "We will determine what the temperature of the water is," end quote, he said. "The other issue we have out there is that this water is current influenced. So right now, we think the tide is coming back in. That adds a bit of a challenge to us," end quote. John Olszewski, Jr., the Baltimore County executive, said at the news conference that he thought people were stunned and reeling from the incident. Quote, "I think that's particularly true for people who are worried about their loved ones right now," end quote, he said. "I think there will be plenty of time to talk about what this bridge means to the community and what it means to commerce," end quote. The Baltimore City Fire Chief, James Wallace, said in a news conference that officials were searching for, quote, upwards of seven people, end quote, and that two people had already been pulled from the water. One person declined medical service, and the other was transported to a trauma center in serious condition, he said. The Francis Scott Key Bridge, which collapsed after being struck by a cargo ship early Tuesday, was named after the American lawyer who wrote the lyrics of the national anthem. Construction of the bridge started in 1972 and was completed in March 1977. Plans for the bridge began in the early 1970s after traffic inundated the Baltimore Harbor Tunnel, through which Interstate 895 crosses the harbor. When the bridge opened, the New York Times reported that construction costs had totaled $141 million, which is roughly $735 million in today's dollars. Pete Buttigieg, the U.S. Transportation Secretary, said on social media that he had offered federal support to Baltimore's mayor and Maryland's governor. It's still not clear how many people were on the bridge when the cargo ship made impact or what happened to them. Johnny Olszewski, Jr., the Baltimore County executive, said on social media that an emergency response was ongoing. He did not elaborate and could not be reached for comment.
The lead national story on the front page of the Hartford Current runs under the headline, Five-Judge Panel Grants Trump Breaks in His Civil Fraud Case. Appeals Court Cuts Bond, OK's Pause in Collection of Assets. This article by Jennifer Peltz and Michael R. Sisek of the Associated Press, and it is datelined New York. A New York appeals court agreed Monday to hold off collection of former President Donald Trump's more than $454 million civil fraud judgment if he puts up $175 million within 10 days. If Trump does, it will stop the clock on collection and prevent the state from seizing the presumptive Republican presidential nominee's assets while he appeals. The appeals court also halted other aspects of a trial judge's ruling that had barred Trump and his sons Eric and Donald Jr., the family's company's executive vice presidents, from serving in corporate leadership for several years. In all, the order was a significant victory for the Republican ex-president as he defends the real estate empire that vaulted him into public life. The development came just before New York Attorney General Letitia James, a Democrat, was expected to initiate efforts to collect the judgment. Quote, "What he's done is such a disservice and should never be allowed to happen again," unquote, said Trump, who argues that the fraud case is discouraging business in New York. James's office noted that the judgment still stands even if collection is paused. Quote, "Donald Trump is still facing accountability for his staggering fraud," unquote, the office said in a statement. Trump's lawyers had pleaded for a state appeals court to halt collection, claiming it was, quote, "a practical impossibility," unquote, to get an underwriter to sign off on a bond for such a large sum, which grows daily because of interest. The Trump attorneys had earlier proposed a $100 million bond, but an appellate judge had said no late last month. Monday's ruling came from a five-judge panel in the state's intermediate appeals court, called the Appellate Division, where Trump is fighting to overturn Engoron's February 16th decision. Trump attorneys Alina Haba and Christopher Kies characterized Monday's ruling as a key first step. Siding with the attorney general after a months-long civil trial, Engoron found that Trump, his company, and top executives lied about his wealth on financial statements, conning bankers and insurers who did business with him. The statements valued Trump's penthouse for years as though it were nearly three times its actual size, for example. Trump and his co-defendants denied any wrongdoing, saying the statements actually lowballed his fortune, came with disclaimers, and weren't taken at face value by the institutions that lent to or insured him. The penthouse discrepancy, he said, was simply a mistake made by subordinates. Engoron ordered Trump to pay $355 million plus interest. Some co-defendants, including Trump's sons, were ordered to pay smaller amounts. Monday's ruling also puts those on hold if the $175 million bond is posted. After James won the judgment, she didn't seek to enforce it during the legal timeout for Trump to ask the appeals court for a reprieve from paying up. That period ended Monday, although James could have decided to allow Trump more time.
And from the New York Times, Security Council urges ceasefire as U.S. abstains. Criticizing its ally, Israel calls off Gaza talks in Washington. This by Farnaz Fashi, Aaron Boxerman, and Thomas Fuller. The United Nations Security Council on Monday passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip during the remaining weeks of Ramadan, breaking a five-month impasse during which the United States vetoed three calls for a halt to the fighting. The resolution passed with 14 votes in favor and the United States abstaining, which U.S. officials said they did in part because the resolution did not condemn Hamas. In addition to a ceasefire, the resolution also called for the, quote, "immediate and unconditional release of all hostages," end quote, and the lifting of, quote, "all barriers to the provision of humanitarian assistance," end quote. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel immediately criticized the United States for allowing the resolution to pass and ordered a delegation scheduled to go to Washington to hold high-level talks with the U.S. officials to remain in Israel instead. President Biden had requested those meetings to discuss alternatives to a planned Israeli offensive into Rafah, the city in southern Gaza where more than a million people have sought refuge. American officials have said that such an operation would create a humanitarian disaster. Mr. Netanyahu's office called the U.S. abstention from the vote a, quote, "clear departure from the consistent U.S. position in the Security Council since the beginning of the war," end quote, and said it, quote, "harms both the war effort and the effort to release the hostages," end quote. Top Israeli officials indicated that they would not implement the resolution for now. Quote, "The state of Israel will not cease firing. We will destroy Hamas and continue fighting until every last hostage has come home," end quote. Israel Katz, the country's foreign minister, wrote on social media. Yoav Gallant, the Israeli defense minister, who was already in Washington for meetings with top Biden administration officials, similarly gave no sign Israel would implement a ceasefire. Quote, "We will operate against Hamas everywhere, including in places where we have not yet been," end quote, he said. He added, quote, "We have no moral right to stop the war while there are still hostages held in Gaza," end quote. The White House sought to play down the growing rift with Israel. John F. Kirby, a spokesman for the National Security Council, insisted there had been no change in the U.S. policy. He said that there had been no official notification that the full delegation from Israel was not coming to Washington, but added, quote, "We were looking forward to having an opportunity to speak to a delegation later this week on exploring viable options and alternatives to a major ground offensive in Rafah." Quote, "We felt we had valuable lessons to share," Mr. Kirby said. He noted that Mr. Gallant was still expected to meet with Mr. Biden's National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, as well as Secretary of State Attorney Anthony J. Blinken and Defense Secretary Lord J. Austin III.
Now this headline from the World and Nation section of the Hartford Current. Supreme Court to hear case on abortion drug use, access. This by Mark Sherman of the Associated Press. The Supreme Court will again wade into the fractious issue of abortion this week when it hears arguments over a medication used in the most common way to end a pregnancy. The mifepristone case has implications for millions of women, no matter where they live in America, and perhaps for the race for the White House. 2 years after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and cleared the way for bans or severe restrictions on abortion in many Republican-led states, abortion opponents will ask the High Court Tuesday to ratify a ruling from a conservative federal appeals court that would limit access to mifepristone, which was used in nearly two-thirds of all abortions in the United States last year. That decision to reverse Roe had immediate political consequences, with Democrats making the case that the court had taken away a right that women held for half a century, and winning elections as a result. Even conservative-leaning states like Kansas and Ohio voted against abortion restrictions. By rolling back Food and Drug Administration changes to the use of mifepristone, the ruling would cut off access to the drug through the mail and impose other restrictions, even in states where abortion is legal. The restrictions would shorten the time when mifepristone can be used in pregnancy to 7 weeks from 10 currently. Most adults in the United States, 55%, believe medication abortion pills are very or somewhat safe when taken as directed by a doctor, according to a KFF poll from May 2023. And 65% have a lot or some confidence in the FDA to ensure that medications sold in the United States are safe and effective. A decision should come by late June. But no matter the outcome, the Supreme Court has not seen its last abortion case. Legal battles are pending over state restrictions, and new federal limits are likely if former President Donald Trump, the Republicans' presumptive nominee for 2024, returns to the White House.
Vowing the U.S. will do our job, Johnson searches for a path on Ukraine. The Republican speaker with his job on the line has privately told people he would make sure the House moves to assist Ukraine, a step that many members of his party oppose. This by Katie Edmondson. When Speaker Mike Johnson opened the floor for questions at a closed-door luncheon fundraiser in New Jersey last month, Jacques K. Colgan asked how, in the face of vehement opposition within his own ranks, he planned to handle aid for Ukraine. What followed was an impassioned monologue by Mr. Johnson in which he explained why continued American aid to Kyiv was, in his view, vital. a message starkly at odds with the hard right views that have overtaken his party. He invoked his political roots as a Reagan Republican, denounced President Vladimir V. Putin of Russia as a madman, and conceded the issue had forced him to walk, quote, a delicate political tightrope, end quote. Reminded by Ms. Colgan, a member of the American Coalition for Ukraine, a nonprofit advocacy group, of the adage that the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil was for good people to do nothing. Mr. Johnson replied that he kept a copy of the quotation framed in his office. Quote, that's not going to be us, end quote, he assured her. Quote, we're going to do our job, end quote. The exchange reflects what Mr. Johnson has privately told donors, foreign leaders, and fellow members of Congress in recent weeks. According to extensive notes Ms. Colgan took during the New Jersey event and interviews with several other people who have spoken with him, while the speaker has remained noncommittal about any one option, he has repeatedly expressed a personal desire to send aid to Ukraine, something he has voted against repeatedly in the past, and now appears to be in search of the least politically damaging way to do it. The challenge for Mr. Johnson is that any combination of aid measures he puts to a vote will likely infuriate the growing isolationist wing of his party, which considers the issue toxic. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, who has repeatedly said she would call a snap vote to unseat the speaker if he allowed a vote for Ukraine aid before imposing restrictive immigration measures, filed a resolution on Friday calling for his removal, saying she wanted to send him, quote, a warning, end quote. Even if Ms. Greene follows through on the threat, Mr. Johnson could still hold on to his job. Representative Hakeem Jeffries of New York, the minority leader, said he believed a, quote, reasonable number, end quote, of Democrats would vote to save the speaker were he to face Republican mutiny for acting on a Senate-based aid package. Though on Friday, Mr. Jeffries said that he had been an observation, not a declaration.
From the New York Times now, the National Weather Forecast. A strong storm will spread rain and thunderstorms today from the Great Lakes to the southeast. Two separate zones of severe thunderstorms are expected, with damaging wind gusts and flooding downpours possible from eastern Mississippi to Georgia. Portions of Indiana, southern Michigan, and western Ohio could also have thunderstorms with heavy downpours, damaging wind gusts, and hail. On the cold side of the storm, snow will taper off across Iowa and Minnesota. That's the National Weather Forecast. We pause now for the local weather.
If you're a cancer survivor or caregiver to a cancer survivor, contact the National Federation of the Blind to learn more about the NFB Blind Cancer Survivors Division.
The forecast for tonight has areas of drizzle with a chance of showers, otherwise cloudy, with a low around 37. Chance of precipitation is 30%. Tomorrow, Wednesday, there's a slight chance of showers, otherwise mostly cloudy, with a high near 58. Chance of precipitation is 30%. And tomorrow night, there's a chance of showers, cloudy, with a low around 45. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Thursday, we'll have rain, with a high near 51. Chance of precipitation is 80%. And Thursday night, rain is likely. It'll be cloudy, with a low around 38. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Friday, there's a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, with a high near 48. Chance of precipitation is 30%. And Friday night, partly cloudy, with a low around 34. Have a good evening. Thank you for listening to Chris.
We turn our attention now to business news as the front pages continue, and the following articles will all come from the business section of today's New York Times, where the lead headline reads, Boeing CEO to step down in major reshuffle at embattled plane maker. This article is by Sydney Ember and Niraj Chuchki. Boeing abruptly said on Monday that it was overhauling its leadership amid its most significant safety crisis in years, announcing sweeping changes that included the departure of its chief executive, Dave Calhoun. At the end of the year, the aircraft maker has been under mounting pressure from regulators, airlines, and passengers as the company struggled to respond to the fallout from an incident in early January in which a panel blew off a Boeing 737 MAX 9 plane mid-air during an Air Alaska flight. The incident has roiled the company, considered by many to be a prized American institution, and renewed concerns about its commitment to safety and quality 5 years after two crashes of 737 MAX 8 planes killed a total of nearly 350 people. In addition to Mr. Calhoun's departure, Boeing announced that Stan Deal, the head of the division that makes planes for airlines and other commercial customers, would retire immediately. He will be replaced by Stephanie Pope, Boeing's chief operating officer, the company said in a statement.
EU targets tech giants over rules on fairness. This by Adam Santariano and Trip Mickle. Alphabet, Apple, and Meta were told by European Union regulators on Monday that they were under investigation for a range of potential violations of the region's new competition law. The inquiries are the first that regulators have announced since the Digital Markets Act took effect on March 7th, and they signal the bloc's intention to tightly enforce the sweeping competition rules. The law requires Alphabet, Apple, Meta, and other tech giants to open up their platforms so smaller rivals can have more access to their users, potentially affecting app stores, messaging services, internet search, social media, and online shopping. The investigations in Brussels add to the regulatory scrutiny facing the largest tech companies and show growing alignment between the United States and Europe on the need to crack down on the firms for anti-competitive behavior. Last week in Washington, the Justice Department sued Apple for breaking antitrust laws with practices that were intended to keep customers reliant on their iPhones and less likely to switch to a competing device. Amazon, Google, and Meta are also facing federal antitrust lawsuits. EU investigators said they wanted to study whether Apple and Alphabet, the parent company of Google, were unfairly favoring their own app stores to box out rivals, particularly restrictions that limit how app developers can communicate with customers about sales and other offers. Google is also being investigated over the display of search results in Europe, while Meta will be questioned about a new ad-free subscription service and the use of data for selling advertising. The European Commission, the European Union's executive arm, can fine the companies up to 10% of their global revenue, which for each runs into the hundreds of billions of dollars annually. The Commission has 12 months to complete its investigations.
Tesla's troubles raise questions about its invincibility. As the share price plunges, investors wonder whether the company led by Elon Musk can withstand intensifying competition. This article by Melissa Eddy and Jack Ewing. Elon Musk appeared to be in a defiant mood Wednesday when he stood before employees at Tesla's factory near Berlin a week after an arsonist set fire to a high-voltage power pylon and brought production to a standstill. Quote, "They can't stop us," unquote, Mr. Musk, the company's chief executive, told workers in a giant tent beside the plant. But there are proliferating signs that Tesla may not be as unstoppable as it once seemed. The company's car sales are no longer growing at a torrid pace. Chinese automakers and established brands like BMW and Volkswagen are flooding the market with electric cars, and Tesla has been slow to respond with new models. Mr. Musk's many outside ventures and his penchant for making polarizing political statements and attacking people he disagrees with have raised questions about how focused he remains on managing Tesla. Wall Street is increasingly concerned about the company. Tesla's share price has lost one-third of its value this year, even as major stock indices have hit record highs. Quote, "A bet on Tesla has always been a bet on Mr. Musk," unquote, said Eric Talley, a professor at Columbia Law School who focuses on corporate law, governance, and finance. In an interview with the former television anchor Don Lemon that streamed online on Monday, Mr. Musk brushed off the drop in the company's share price as part of the cycle. Quote, "Stocks go up and down, but what really matters is, are we making and delivering great products?" unquote, Mr. Musk said. The week-long production stop at Tesla's factory, its second this year, was only a temporary setback. But the decline in the share price indicates that investors are reassessing Tesla's long-term prospects and are no longer certain that the company, still worth more than any other car maker, will one day dominate the industry.
NBC News faces rebellion over hiring a former Republican Party chair. In extraordinary on-air remarks, Mika Brzezinski, Joe Scarborough, and Nicole Wallace questioned their own network's decision to hire Rona McDaniel as a political analyst. This by Michael M. Grunbaum. Leadership at NBC raced to contain an escalating revolt on Monday as some of the country's best-known television anchors took the extraordinary step of criticizing their network on its own airwaves for hiring Rona McDaniel, the former chairwoman of the Republican National Committee, as a political analyst. One by one, MSNBC stars lined up to berate their bosses on live television. Rachel Maddow, the biggest star and highest-rated anchor at MSNBC, opened her 9 p.m. show with a 29-minute monologue that described Ms. McDaniel's hiring as inexplicable. Quote, "I want to associate myself with all my colleagues, both at MSNBC and NBC News, who have voiced loud and principled objections to our company putting on the payroll someone who hasn't just attacked us as journalists, but someone who is part of an ongoing project to get rid of our system of government," end quote, she said. Continuing, "someone who is still trying to convince Americans that this election stuff, it doesn't really work," end quote. Ms. Maddow then implored company executives to reverse their decision. Quote, "Take a minute. Acknowledge that maybe it wasn't the right call," end quote, she said, continuing, "it is a sign of strength, not weakness, to acknowledge when you're wrong," end quote. By the time Ms. Maddow came on the air, it had been a full day of rebuke on MSNBC. Early in the morning, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski opened Morning Joe with a lengthy criticism of Ms. McDaniel, calling her, quote, "an anti-democracy election denier," end quote, and urging their bosses to reconsider her employment. Quote, "We've been inundated with calls this weekend, as have most people connected with this network, about NBC's decision to hire her," end quote, Mr. Scarborough said. Quote, "We weren't asked our opinion of the hiring, but if we were, we would have strongly objected to it for several reasons," end quote. And Nicole Wallace all but accused her employer of enabling authoritarianism by granting Ms. McDaniel a platform. And we'll return after this message.
Hi, I'm Rick Gray, a Chris Radio volunteer. Chris wants you to know that the Connecticut Collaborative to End Loneliness is hosting a series of Connecting Connecticut conversations during March and April. Come by yourself or bring a friend or family member and join in the conversation on the importance of social health and the negative health aspects of loneliness. You'll hear from a panel of residents and experts, and then have the opportunity to share your thoughts. Here's the schedule for the Connecting Connecticut Conversation Series, sponsored in part by WellSpark Health. April 10th, 4:30 to 6 p.m. at the Danbury Public Library. April 24th, 3:30 to 5 p.m. at Trumbull's Main Library. Pick the time and location that works best for you, and you'll leave inspired to improve your social health. Attendance is limited, so go to their website, endlonelinesscT.org, to register. That's endlonelinesscT.org.
We turn our attention now exclusively to state and local news as the front pages continue, and all the articles in the remainder of the program will come from today's Hartford Current. Starting with this headline on the front page, Health Center claims rogue board. Disgruntled workers allegedly took over Charter Oak Health, this by Ed Stannard. A takeover of the board of Charter Oak Health Center by several employees threatens the health care of vulnerable Connecticut residents, according to claims by the former board president in a lawsuit against its current board. Adrian Wood, who left as president in November of 2023 after serving on the board for 10 years, is suing three current board members. Other plaintiffs include Charter Oak Health Center Incorporated and four other ousted board members: Joel Cruz, Martin John, Eileen Alvarado, and Leslie Arroyo. They are suing three other board members: Veronica Barcelona, Claudius McNish, and Lolita Young. Barcelona is listed as chairperson of the board on the Charter Oaks website. McNish and Young are listed as board members. Attempts to reach the defendants in the lawsuit were unsuccessful. The suit was filed in Superior Court in Hartford. According to the lawsuit, former board members claim they were sent letters saying they had served beyond their terms. Their email accounts were shut down and they were locked out of the building. Quote, "There's been a coup. The disgruntled employees have taken over the institution, period," unquote, said Robert Simpson, an attorney with Shook, Hardy, and Bacon of Hartford, who is representing Charter Oak. Quote, "The lawsuit is trying to restore law and order," unquote, he said. Quoting again, "The board, the duly constituted and legal board, was thrown out as a practical matter. And the only way to bring about law and order is to have the courts address this issue to reinstate the board members that were improperly thrown out," unquote. Simpson said the staff members took over the board, which violates corporate governance. Quote, "You have employees of an organization who report to the president, the CEO, and the president's CEO then reports to the board," unquote, he said. Quoting once more, "This is corporate law 101. Under no circumstances should employees of an organization overthrow the board. That's outrageous, ridiculous, absurd," unquote. Charter Oak is a federally qualified health center which receives federal funds and offers medical care to underserved populations, regardless of ability to pay. Wood said the plaintiffs are suing to preserve the reputation of Charter Oak among the patients it serves. Quote, "One of my major concerns is what this means for the quality of health care that we provide for a very vulnerable population. And to see all this kind of turmoil and all these things that are happening as a result of actions of certain people, we call into question what kind of impact that will have on people that are oftentimes very uncomfortable going to receive medical attention," unquote, Wood said. The suit's complaint cites a, quote, "rogue faction of senior staff and board members," unquote, that allegedly both unlawfully terminated the interim CEO, a former CEO who was serving as a consultant, and others, and which, quote, "then attempted to install an illegally appointed interim CEO and chairperson of the board," unquote. Wood said another key issue is that the new board's action, quote, "begins to set a precedent around what employees can do when they get dissatisfied," unquote. Quoting once more, "There's never been a case whereby employees get to have any voice in regards to making decisions about board access," unquote, he said. Quote, "Employees can be unhappy with the board members. That's their right. They don't get to interfere with board activities. They don't get to call board members and have conversations with board members," unquote. According to the suit's claims, quote, "this rogue faction of senior staff has restricted the duly elected board members' access to Charter Oak facilities, business records, financial transactions, and information systems, such as email accounts and information technology systems, rendering it essentially impossible for the proper oversight of Charter Oak by its duly elected and appointed board," unquote.
Goats lose prime parking. Hartford baseball team rolls out new options for its fans. This by Kenneth Goslin. Redevelopment around Hartford's Duncan Park will mean the loss of prime parking lots for fans of the Hartford Yard Goats this season. But the team said Monday it has added two new options that will more than replace the lost spaces. Construction is gearing up for the next phase of North Crossing, a mixed-use development around the city's minor league ballpark. that will be built on a lot across Main Street from the front entrance of Duncan Park. Tim Restall, the team's president, said the lot was one of the closest that was available to fans, but it was also one of the smallest, with the capacity of about 300 vehicles. Quote, it would typically fill in between an hour and a half before the game started, end quote, Restall said, continuing, even though it had great location, it wasn't that big, end quote. To offset the loss of the spaces, the team is adding $5 parking at two new locations, the Church Street Garage and the Saints Lot, also on Church Street. The garage has nearly 1,300 spaces and the lot 285 spaces. The team is also stepping up marketing of the availability of a parking deck and surface lot on the former campus of Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute at 275 Windsor Street. The deck and lot were open last year, but were not heavily promoted. The two locations have about 800 spaces. Restall said all parking options are within a 5-minute walk of the park. Altogether, the six locations have 5,500 spaces for those attending the games. The home opener is on April 9th versus the Bowie Bay Sox, a Baltimore Orioles affiliate. Restall said a typical game requires parking for about 1,200 vehicles. The team advises fans to put the location of where they intend to park into their GPS when they attend a game. The addresses of the parking lots and the garages are 300 Market Street, Saints Lot, and continuing. Fans can also visit a new website, yardgoatsparking.com, for more information.
RU Lompalom unveils first budget. No tax increase, no boost to education funding in Hartford Mayor's $623 million proposal. This by Stephen Underwood. Newly elected Hartford Mayor Aryunan Arulampalam's first budget would add a new housing official, create a new business office, and give a major boost to youth sports and recreation while holding the tax rate steady. The $623 million proposal, around $4 million higher than former Mayor Luke Bronin's $619 million plan, leaves most of last year's budget relatively intact, with an increase for police and no increase to education funding. Quote, this budget reflects a reduction in anticipated tax revenue collections over the prior year, but includes no new borrowing for the ninth consecutive year, no increase in taxes or fees, and maintains our city's fiscal strength, unquote, Arulampalam said at a press conference Monday at City Hall. The city, which continues to see a decrease in the grand list, saw around $1 million in losses from property tax appeals and a reduction in vehicle values. But despite the tax losses, Arulampalam said the budget maintains the city's mill rate of 68.95 mills, driven by nearly $5 million in revenue increases to the city from budgeted state aid. Quote, this is my first proposed budget as your mayor. Like many cities around the state and around this country, we faced some tough decisions in this budget year. This proposed budget addresses those challenges without raising taxes or fees or cutting city services or staff. At the same time, this budget makes responsible investments in the areas of housing, violence prevention, youth engagement, small business growth, and the quality of life, unquote, Arulampalam said in a statement.
Representative Hayes pushes back on accusations. Ex-state senator accused her of backing anti-Semitism, by Allison Cross. U.S. Representative Johanna Hayes clapped back on comments from Republican analysts who accused her of standing, quote, with the anti-Semites who want to destroy the state of Israel, unquote, on a Sunday morning political talk show. Hayes called the comments made by former Connecticut Senate Majority Leader John McKinney of WTNH's Capitol Report, quote, outrageous and inflammatory, unquote, in a tweet after the segment aired Sunday. In the same statement, Hayes said McKinney's words linked her to a, quote, terrorist organization, unquote. Hayes demanded, quote, a retraction and an apology, unquote, if McKinney could not say what the comments were based on. Hayes' response led to a firestorm of tweets from Republican strategist Liz Kurantowicz, a fellow analyst on Capitol Report, who accused Hayes of supporting the Council on American-Islamic Relations, a Muslim civil rights and advocacy group that Kurantowicz described as an, quote, anti-Israel group that's now defending Hamas, unquote. Farhan Maimam, a chair of the Connecticut chapter of CAIR, criticized McKinney and Kurantowicz's rhetoric, saying, quote, it leads to hate in our communities, unquote. After a heated exchange with Kurantowicz on X, Hayes signaled on a radio local radio show that followers of her campaign can expect more combative engagement with critics in the lead-up to what is likely to be a tight race between Hayes and her Republican opponent, George Logan, this November. McKinney made his remarks Sunday during a portion of the show discussing Hayes' response to a visit to Connecticut by House Speaker Mike Johnson to endorse Logan. Quote, there are a lot of Jewish voters in the 5th District, and Johanna Hayes doesn't stand with them. She doesn't stand with the State of Israel. She stands with the anti-Semites who want to destroy the State of Israel, unquote, McKinney said.
IG rules officer shooting justified. Man allegedly struck several police vehicles during I-95 car chase, this by Taylor Hartz. A newly released report from the Office of Inspector General has found that an East Haven police officer was justified in firing his weapon at a 27-year-old man with multiple police warrants in Milford last January. Inspector General Robert J. Devlin, Jr. wrote in the report that East Haven Police Lieutenant Joseph Finoia, who fired his duty pistol at Nicholas Gambardella on January 5, 2023 in Milford, quote, reacted reasonably in attempting to eliminate the threat, unquote. Finoia fired his weapon at Gambardella off Interstate 95 in Milford, where officers had chased him after he drove his car towards several police vehicles, nearly striking officers as they tried to arrest him on multiple warrants outside a Burger King in Brantford. Officers followed Gambardella's car onto the highway for about 17 miles, then chased him on foot after he crashed into a guardrail near Exit 36. Gambardella ignored officers' orders to get on the ground, reached into his waistband, and extended his arms in front of his chest as if he were pointing something at officers, according to the report. Quote, I believed Gambardella was going to shoot me, unquote, Finoia said in an interview for the report. Quoting again, I was in fear for my personal safety, that of other officers, and for the safety of civilians in the area and having no time for any de-escalation measures, unquote. Finoia fired his pistol at Gambardella three times. Gambardella was not hit but fell to the ground and was taken into custody. At that moment, Devlin and Finoia were justified in thinking he was a danger and that any officer would have felt their life was being threatened too. Quote, it will be reasonable for Finoia to conclude that a firearm was being pointed at him, endangering his life and the lives of other officers nearby. Furthermore, this conclusion would be shared by another reasonable officer faced with the same situation, unquote, he said. And now let us pause for this message.
Hi, I'm Mario Cajar, a Chris Radio volunteer, inviting you to join the Connecticut Lions for their 17th annual Visually Impaired Persons Fishing Tournament. The Junior Division, for children 3 to 18 years old, will be held Sunday, April 28th at Sage Park Pond in Berlin. Registration and breakfast begins at 8:30 a.m., fishing at 9, followed by lunch and an awards presentation. Breakfast, lunch, and all fishing equipment will be provided at no charge by the Berlin Lions. Applications are due by April 6th, so don't delay. Get your application in today for this fun day with friends and fishing. The Senior Division Tournament will be held Monday, May 20th. And again this year, you'll be heading out to sea from Niantic aboard the Blackhawk Sport Fishing Charter, going for fluke, porgy, or whatever else is biting. Registration deadline for the Senior Division is April the 27th.
For more information and applications, call Laurie Satkowski at 860-250-4663. That's 860-250-4663. or email Lori at setkowski@sbcglobal.net.
We continue our concentration on state and local news as the front pages continue, and we go to this headline. Simsbury mulls new rules for developers. Percentage of units would need to be affordable. This by Don Stakem. Following the lead of neighboring Canton, Simsbury is considering a requirement that developers of mid-sized and large apartment complexes set aside a significant share of the units as affordable housing. The town's proposed zoning rule would mean that for many new residential developments of more than 9 units, a builder would be required to set aside at least 15% for tenants making well below the statewide average income. And at a discussion this week, town planner George McGregor told the Zoning Commission that it might also levy a stiffer rule for even larger projects. So, for a building of more than 20 apartments, at least 20% would be required to be leased at affordable rates. The Commission wants to invite developers and housing advocates to a discussion about the specifics before adopting any rule. But at its meeting, members appeared to have a general interest in pursuing some form of new requirement on developers. McGregor told commissioners that the new regulation would be a way to implement goals that the community has already agreed on. Quote, "The recent plan of conservation and development, your long-range plan, as well as the affordable housing plan, have clear goals to increase affordable housing units in the town of Simsbury," unquote, McGregor said. Simsbury is among the wealthier suburbs in central Connecticut, and a 2022 report concluded that only 5.1% of its housing stock qualifies as affordable under state definitions. That's barely half of Connecticut's goal that all 169 towns and cities provide at least 10% affordable housing. Numerous Connecticut communities in the past several years have levied similar requirements on developers, largely prompted by the state's 8-30G law that provides a serious penalty against towns or cities with less than 10% affordable housing.
Men who fled crash on I-291 arrested on firearm charges. This by Justin Musinski. Two Massachusetts men were arrested on firearm charges last week when authorities recovered two rifles and two handguns shortly after the suspects fled a one-car crash on Interstate 291 in South Windsor. Jamal Clark, 22, and Charles Brown, 25, of Springfield, Massachusetts, were each charged with 4 counts of illegal possession of a weapon in a motor vehicle and carrying a dangerous weapon, and 2 counts of criminal possession of a firearm, possession of a machine gun, and possession of a large-capacity magazine, according to Connecticut State Police. Clark was additionally charged with interfering with an officer, evading responsibility, and failure to maintain a proper lane after allegedly crashing a 2022 Dodge Durango on 291 East just before Exit 4 on Friday, state police said. Troopers responded to reports of the crash at 2:47 p.m. and found that the unoccupied Durango's front wheels were elevated, as the vehicle had become stuck upon striking a guardrail attenuator in the left lane. Officers with the South Windsor and East Hartford Police Departments were asked to assist after troopers received reports that 2 people were seen fleeing the crash on foot, state police said. According to state police, a witness who remained on the line with Troop H dispatchers said the 2 individuals, one of whom was carrying a bag, were seen looking into a dumpster at a gas station near the Exit 4 off-ramp. Officers from South Windsor and East Hartford located Clark and Brown shortly thereafter at the gas station and found an, quote, AK-style rifle, unquote, and a Glock 9mm handgun in the dumpster. State police said neither suspect suffered any apparent injuries in the crash. A state police and East Hartford K-9 unit were used to search the area where the suspects had been seen, leading to investigators finding 2 additional guns that included an M4 5.56 caliber rifle with a 30-round magazine and a Black Glock, a 40 caliber handgun with a 24-round magazine, according to state police.
Detective honored for her bravery, heroism is our next headline, was attacked by hammer-wielding man last year. This article is by Justin Musinski. A Middletown detective injured last year during an attack by a hammer-wielding man has been inducted into the National Law Enforcement Officer Hall of Fame. Detective Carly Travis was among 8 inductees recognized during a ceremony over the weekend, according to the nonprofit organization's website. Travis was honored with the Courage in Service Award. Quote, she is recognized for her bravery and heroism for an officer-involved shooting that saved her life and the lives of others last year, unquote, the Middletown Police Department wrote in a statement. Quote, congratulations, Detective Travis. MPD and the City of Middletown are proud of you, unquote. Quoting again, Detective Travis has held herself to a high standard of integrity, dedication, and excellence, unquote, Middletown Police Chief Eric Costa said. Quote, her split-second decision to protect her community and herself goes without question. We are all thankful for the support of Detective Travis, and her induction into the Hall of Fame stands as a testament to her unwavering commitment to service as a Middletown police officer, unquote. On August 12th, Travis was working a routine patrol shift when she responded, just after 6:30 a.m., to a multifamily home at 195 Liberty Street on the report of excessive noise and glass breaking, according to a preliminary report on the shooting released by Connecticut Inspector General Robert Devlin Jr. After parking her marked cruiser and approaching the home on foot, Travis was confronted by a 52-year-old Winston Tate. Holding a hammer in his right hand, Tate exited the home and began walking toward Travis, body camera footage of the incident shows. The footage shows Travis asking Tate to put the hammer down multiple times before he begins charging at her. She screams for him to stop as he continues charging toward her and pushes her to the ground before attacking her, video shows. Tate can be heard screaming in apparent pain as he continues to attack the detective, despite Travis firing her weapon multiple times, her body camera shows. The body camera fell to the ground at some point during the struggle. According to the preliminary report, Tate was wounded during the gunfire and retreated into the home. Additional officers surrounded the home before Tate exited the basement hatchway and was taken into custody, the report said. He was treated by medics and taken in an ambulance to Hartford Hospital. Tate was released from the hospital 2 days later and has been held on $850,000 bond on assault charges, court records show.
Woman allegedly stabbed bouncers during bar fight. This by Taylor Hartz. A Wallingford woman allegedly stabbed bouncers at a Southington bar when a fight broke out early Saturday, police said. Heidi Montez, 24, allegedly used a purple, quote, wand shank, unquote, on her keychain to stab bouncers at the 75 Center Bar in the face, neck, and head as they tried to remove her sibling and friend from the bar for fighting, according to the Southington Police Department. About 1:30 a.m. Saturday, police from Southington, Plainville, and Cheshire responded to 75 Center for reports of a fight and a stabbing, police said. Before officers arrived, bar staff tried to intervene in an argument involving 28-year-old Adrian Montez and 32-year-old Stuart Chase, both from Massachusetts, according to police. As the argument escalated, bouncers escorted them both to the front door. Stuart allegedly punched a bouncer in the face, starting a fight, police said. Police allege that during the fight, Heidi Montez, Adrian Montez's sister, took out a wand shank and pepper spray that were on her keychain and threatened to stab bouncers, according to police. She then allegedly sprayed pepper spray at one bouncer and stabbed them in the face multiple times. Then she allegedly stabbed a second bouncer multiple times in the head and neck, police said. Three bouncers suffered injuries from the attack. Two were transported for medical treatment and were reportedly in good condition, quote, having narrowly escaped potentially life-threatening injuries, unquote, according to police. Multiple people witnessed the attack, which also was captured on surveillance video. Lottery for Monday, March 25th. Play 3-day, 4, 6, 3, Wild Ball 9. Play 4-day, 1, 6, 4, 4, Wild Ball 0. The late lotto numbers were not drawn in time for this edition. For results, please visit current.com lottery. Sunday's late numbers. Play 3 night, 2, 9, 1, Wild Ball 7. Play 4 night, 8, 8, 5, 4, Wild Ball 9. Cash 5, 2, 6, 30, 34, 35. Lucky for life, 5, 19, 30, 37, 45. Lucky Ball 13. Tonight's estimated lotto jackpot, 2 million. Tonight's estimated Mega Millions jackpot, $1.1 billion.
On now to Today in History, and we'll start by noting that today is Tuesday, it's March 26th. This is the 86th day of 2024. There are 280 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history occurred on March 26th of 1997. On that date, the bodies of 39 members of the Heaven's Gate techno-religious cult who committed suicide were found inside a rented mansion in Rancho Santa Fe, California. Also occurring on this date in 1812, an earthquake devastated Caracas, Venezuela, causing an estimated 26,000 deaths, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. In 1827 on this date, composer Ludwig van Beethoven died in Vienna at the age of 56. In 1945, during World War II, Iwo Jima was successfully secured by U.S. forces following a final desperate attack by Japanese soldiers. In 1962, the U.S. Supreme Court in Baker v. Carr gave federal courts the power to order reapportionment of states' legislative districts. In 1973, the soap opera The Young and the Restless premiered on CBS TV. And in 1979, a peace treaty was signed by Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin and Egyptian President Anwar Sadat and witnessed by President Jimmy Carter at the White House. And that's all for this edition of The Front Pages. We've been reading from today's Hartford Current and New York Times. Your readers have been Kathy Danaher. I'm Jim McPherson. If you missed any part of the program, it is repeated this evening at 6 and 11 p.m., and it's available anytime on our telephone reader service and on demand at our website, chrisradio.org. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're listening to Chris, celebrating 40 years as Connecticut's talking newsstand for the blind and print challenged.
Welcome to the Shopper's Guide. For the next 30 minutes, we'll take a look at the most recent sales flyers from various stores. Due to time limitations, we won't be able to read every sale item, but we'll do our best to feature a good selection from each department or product category to help you find the best values. Now, here's today's Shopper's Guide on Chris.
Hi, everyone. On today's installment of the Shopper's Guide, we'll open up the sales flyer from Stop and Shop, and we'll also hit the website at Stu Leonard's and see what they've posted. We'll begin with Stop and Shop with the prices good through the 28th of March. We'll begin with their Easter Essentials Land O'Lakes Butter or Country Crock Plant Butter. They're both priced at 2 for $7. Tropicana Orange Juice, the 52-ounce bottle, they're 2 for $6. Digital coupon for Hellman's Mayonnaise, that jar is $2.99 if you download that Stop and Shop digital coupon. They also have one for Poland Spring Pure Life or Origin Water. The Poland Spring, a 24-pack. The Pure Life, a 28-pack. The Origin, a 6-pack. Download the coupon. They're 3 for $10.88. Other Easter essentials, Green Giant vegetables in the frozen aisle. They're 5 for $5. Turkey Hill ice cream is 2 for $6. Coke or Smart Water, there's a buy two, get one free. And Polar Seltzer or Soda, they're 77 cents apiece. Other digital coupons on the front page, Stop and Shop 80% lean ground beef at $2.99 a pound. Asparagus, 99 cents a pound with that digital coupon. There's one for pineapples, they're $1.49 with the coupon. And also one for red.